From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of June, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. I'll bring you up to speed on the agricultural news for the day. We have some information about immigration, BOTUS, and so much more, along with some discussion as it's related to soybean exports to China in that segment. And then we'll turn our attention to an insect pest in corn that you may see but probably won't be able to do anything about it. Still, it's important to keep an eye out for grape colaspis, says University of Illinois Extension field crops entomologist Nick Sider. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. It should remain hot this week and probably next week, though there's likely to be rainfall across the Corn Belt. It is Europe that is suffering at this point. We'll ask Mark Russo of Everstream Analytics to bring us up to speed on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. Remember, we need to have everything in the bank by the time we get to the end of this month for use next year, fiscal year, starting on July 1st. You can help us out right now. Make a donation at willag.org or willgive.org. In the first place, look at the top of the page and the donate button.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day at $4.19 and a quarter, finished 9.5 cents lower. December at $4.33 and three quarters, down 7.5. July beans 9.25 lower at $10.58 and three quarters, and November 10.46 and three quarters, down 14 cents for the day. Bean meal off $1.70, settlement price there at $282.40. The bean oil at $53.24, down $1.23. And wheat futures in July, that's the soft red, down 15 cents. Settlement price at $5.52 and three quarters. The hard red July at $5.50, down 13 and a quarter cents. Live cattle futures 45 cents lower at $209.37 and a half. Feeders at $302.80, up 35 cents, and lean hogs at $113.05, 60 cents higher. Crude oil at $68.36, down $5.54 for the day. Diesel fuel at 17 cents lower, $2.33 and three tenths of a cent per gallon. Gasoline on the wholesale price, the RBOB at 219 and two tenths, that's about 11 and eight tenths of a cent lower. S&P 500 up 44 points, the NASDAQ 208 points higher, and the Dow up around 313 points. Here to discuss these numbers is Kurt Kimmel from agmarket.net. Hello, Kurt. Thank you for being with us. Given that Friday was not a holiday, it seemed like an awful lot happened over the weekend and still continues today. You tell me what the market did in the overnight session, and then we can break out how things process through the day today, too.
Yeah, what you think about, you know, does happen, and it did happen over the weekend. What I mean by that is basically there was some activity take place during the weekend when the markets were not trading, which kind of was in a good sense due to the fact that there had been some wild gyrations take place. But yeah, just more unknown uncertainty thrown in. The significance of that probably sticks out like a sore thumb is the crude oil market. You know, the cash off exchange activity took place. When we came in Sunday evening, the crude was up sharply. Actually, today, right now, as we record this, crude oil is down $4.90 a barrel. So crude oil almost had a little over $9 trading range, just trying to price in some uncertainty. So most have watched the news. That news is going to switch around quite a bit, back and forth, reading between the lines. As far as the grains go, Iran particularly imports about 8.5 million metric tons of corn, 2.5 million metric tons of wheat, and just about 3 million metric tons of soybeans. Then plus there's urea, fertilizer, and there's some other agricultural connected products that flow in and out of that region there. So it'll continue to be watch closely. But the idea of putting a little war premium in the marketplace Sunday evening, that gave way to lower trade here as we finished up today with some lower prices as we took some of that war premium back out, Todd.
Iran did retaliate today. They fired missiles into Qatar bases, U.S. bases in Qatar and into Iraq both. We have heard from Qatar, really haven't heard from Iraq, or at the time you and I were recording, we had not. And the president has gone back into the situation room at points to talk about what, if anything, should be done. Much of the conversation that was being had on from the news sites was suggesting that because Iran was clear that they had fired the same number of missiles that the U.S. had used in its Friday evening bombings of the nuclear sites across that nation, it was viewed as a de-escalation. The marketplace, as you suggested, particularly as it relates to oil, seems to have taken that awfully well. That means we're back to fundamentals, I suppose. It's hot here, but it's raining across the Midwest. What do we know about the corn crop in the United States?
To the grain markets, in particular here in the U.S., we'll see what this afternoon's crop conditions report. Even though we have some heat here for a few days, there's some moisture in the forecast, and with the heat and the moisture, it's somewhat favorable. The biggest thing is the heat is welcomed, particularly in the southern third of Illinois and through Indiana. As long as there's not a whole lot more moisture, they're still struggling to plant the first time, if not replant the second or third time. But the trade feels comfortable with production prospects. If we do have some type of weather scenario, it's probably going to be more the second half of the growing season versus the first half of the growing season that most were looking for.
What did you make of the day trade for corn, particularly in the lead option July? New life of contract lows were made.
No, man, that's a sore subject. We've got a grain stocks report coming up. I imagine there's probably more grain stocks around. But if you go back, turn the clock back. If you look at the July futures, back when that was a new crop, when we first started trading the new crop contract, we had a little over 2 billion bushel carryout. The market was at 520. Now the carryout's down to a little over 1.3. billion bushels, much, much tighter, but yet the corn market's a dollar lower. It's frustrating, but it kind of signals that there's enough corn here over the short term.
What do you see in the charts for the soybeans, or what are you hearing from agmarket.net on that front?
Well, we're basically back to where we were here back in May. Not too bad off the February highs. The market held in there fairly well, but the problem is Friday's price reaction is an outside down day. So therefore, technically, we're set up to go back and test these June lows. So it's a matter of up and down, up and down.
When do you think, when you're talking with producers who have old crop, both corn and or soybeans, more likely corn, that they need to sell, that they should decide to throw the towel in?
Yeah, that's been a common phone call here. Still have a little bit of inventory yet to move. We've been recommending to move that. We've replaced ownership with some call options anywhere from 8 cents to 15 cents a bushel. So something would flare up the second half of the growing season. You can try to recoup some upside potential that way. But, hanging on to the cash grains has been kind of frustrating. The biggest thing on the cash grain side is watch your buyers. There could be some basis opportunities as we kind of wind down the market and you hear over the next month or two.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it, Kurt.
You bet. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with the big, beautiful bill. Senate Republicans are racing against the clock as the Senate continues to roll out its version of the reconciliation bill. There are some differences between the House and Senate proposals on agriculture. The main variations come down to changes in the tax provisions, but it's key to note proposed changes to the Farm Safety Net are similar in both the House and Senate versions. The House and Senate will now need to work out their differences in the two versions of the Big Beautiful Bill. President Trump said he wants to sign the legislation July 4, but many reports cast doubt Congress can make that approaching deadline. Politico last week reported that the Senate GOP's version of the bill is facing major headwinds when it returns to the House. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., but turn our attention to policy now. Public listening sessions on the future of the waters of the U.S., or WOTUS rule, have wrapped up, and the Trump administration said it plans to have the rule completed by the end of the year. Throughout the sessions, there was a clear divide between what agriculture and industry groups and environmental groups are seeking in WOTUS, as ag reps said they wanted clearer definitions, while environmental groups asked for no changes to the rule. DTN reports the continued back and forth of definitions and redefinitions from administration to administration in the past 20 years has led to what is currently a patchwork of differing versions of the WOTUS definition from state to state. We'll stay with domestic policies, but this time turn to immigration. Following a week of immigration whiplash, President Trump's border czar, Tom Holman, confirmed last week that immigration raids will continue in the agriculture and hospitality industries. The Trump administration had said it was pausing some ICE raids, and the president today even is suggesting that may still be the case. But Holman's comments reaffirmed that it is reversing course, at least for the moment. Workers at places like farms, restaurants, and hotels will be targeted. And finally today, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says despite the trade uncertainty from the president's tariff impositions, USDA is working to boost U.S. farm exports, especially for soybean. A recent visit to Italy brought this response from Secretary Rollins when the top House Ag Democrat asked in an oversight hearing what Rollins was doing to boost soybean exports.
We had great conversations specific to soy on how we get, which is the number one import, but not nearly enough, how we get more of that into Italy, into the EU, into Japan, into India.
But the ranking Ag Democrat, Angie Craig, wanted to know about the U.S.'s biggest soybean market.
China represents 50% of the U.S. soybean market. Wouldn't it, I'm not going to ask, but I believe it would have been a better strategy to go get these markets before you do an across-the-board trade war that decimates 50% of the market.
President announced a deal with China, so that is being solved.
The U.S. and China have agreed to drop their reciprocal tariffs to 10% for 90 days while negotiating a broader trade deal during the pause. China earlier imposed 10 and 15% duties on key U.S. farm goods. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check now with Nick Sider. He's an extension field crops entomologist based here on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. Hello, Nick. Thank you for being with us. Let's get right to it. Are you hearing of any unusual pest activity in fields this year?
I've received a handful of reports and had the opportunity to walk a few fields that have been impacted by grape calaspis. So grape calaspis is a beetle. It's in the leaf beetle family. And it's an insect pest that we see at irregular intervals, sort of every few years. The last time we had sort of outbreak levels of this insect was in 2018. And most commonly, we see this injury in corn grown following soybeans. So the adults will actually lay their eggs in soybean. Those larvae will grow on those soybean roots a little bit in year one, but then they overwinter as a partially grown larva. The following spring, summer, they come back up the profile and feed on the roots of whatever happens to be in that field. And of course, for us, after a legume in Illinois, that legume's usually soybeans, and the plant grown after it is usually corn. So it can damage a variety of different host plants, but we most commonly see that injury in corn because of our rotation system.
How is it that a farmer can recognize grape calaspis injury?
often the first thing you're going to see if you have grape collapsus injury is nutrient deficiency symptoms, particularly phosphorus and potassium. And that's because these plants that have had their roots fed on by these insects, they aren't doing a very good job of taking up those nutrients. As the healthy plants around the affected area begin to grow, often you'll see kind of some stunting of these affected plants. And so often, you know, as you get a little bit further along, you'll get a better appreciation for the extent of that damage. In many cases, we see areas that are impacted sort of on the tops of hills and areas like that that are a little bit better drained. Very often, that's where we'll see this injury kind of the most pronounced. And if you dig those affected plants up, the insect itself looks kind of like a tiny white grub. And they're not all that closely related to like Japanese beetles and other white grub species, but they do resemble them pretty closely, except they're much smaller. They're going to be maybe a little smaller than a pea, so maybe about 3/16 of an inch, something like that.
Do you have management recommendations for this pest?
We have a lot of unanswered questions on management. Because this insect is so sporadic, we don't have really the opportunity to get great chemical efficacy data on it, for instance. We do see that the active ingredient in the seed treatments does kill it, but very often we'll see this injury in fields that have had a seed treatment applied. So it's a little unclear, you know, what rate and what material would do maybe the best job on that. Of course, like most of these insects that feed on the roots early on, there's no rescue treatment, right? By the time you've seen the injury, there's not a lot we can do about it. We probably have a lot we can learn about soil texture, field history, maybe nutrient management, how those factors affect this insect. But it's really been a struggle to learn very much about management because they're so sporadic and because they occur at these really infrequent intervals. One of the things we'd like to understand a little bit better is sort of the combination of environmental conditions that leads to these outbreaks so that we can better predict them in the future and give farmers a heads up for when this is going to happen.
Nick Sider is an Extension Field Crops Entomologist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to read more from the crop scientist here on campus, you can always do that on our website at willag.org, willag.org, or you can search out Crop Central and sign up for the weekly email from them. That includes an update of what's happening across the state related to crop conditions from the Extension Commercial Ag team. That's at Crop Central. Of course, you can always find that too on our website. It is in the Farm News section from the University of Illinois at willag.org. Let's check in on the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Good Monday to you. Thanks for being here. It's hot. The question is, will it stay hot across the Corn Belt? And more importantly, those chances of rainfall, are they going to actually come up with any valuable precipitation, or is it just a little bit here and a little bit there?
Well, Todd, looking ahead here for the Midwest corn and soybean belt, from a temperature standpoint, yeah, this ridge of high pressure now over the Midwest is producing this pretty impressive heat for early in the season. Still is going to continue for a few more days. However, this ridge of high pressure, while it is strong, it is a mover. So it's going to not be becoming, it's not going to become established over any one area. And because of it moving around, that will allow the Midwest to cool down at times, such as what we're going to see here. Not to like below normal levels, but just won't be as hot coming up later on this week and on into next week compared to what we're seeing right now. And then along with the cooler temperatures, that will also open the door for rain activity. In fact, the pattern will be quite active with frequent opportunities for rain. That's especially the case in the western Midwest for this week, where the highest rainfall totals and coverage will be.
So the eastern belt had been the wettest, and while that and the parts of Kentucky and Tennessee and down to the Delta region. Any changes for them?
Yeah, they're, again, with the rain activity more favored west, the eastern belt will have a bit drier conditions. There'll be a little bit of rain around, but actually with the drier conditions, that will ease some of the excess wetness issues that have been an issue lately there.
Do things change next week across the Corn Belt?
Yeah, continue to see opportunities for rain, a little bit different distribution into the Midwest, a bit more focused with those rains south versus north. But again, temperatures not as hot as this week, but still running a little bit warmer than average.
Will this high, this ridge, continue to move around, or will it become more stationary and an issue for parts of the Corn Belt?
Yeah, great question, Todd. The ridge here looks, well, it's moving east and west, really across much of the country. It's been that way over the past week, looks to stay that way going into and what looks to be at least through the first third of July. And because of that, you're just not establishing any kind of heat, at least over the Midwest, any kind of extreme heat. But eastern U.S. is involved, the western U.S. is involved, and that's going to be the main item to watch as we move through July. But at least through the first 10 days, we do not see any like anchored down ridging and thus no significant heat stress that would negatively impact early pollination here in the Corn Belt.
We have talked about issues in Europe. Can you tell me what you've been watching?
Yeah, that is an area where we are more concerned with summer crop development over the next several weeks. We've seen dryness expand across much of Europe, both Eastern and Western Europe, and they're also seeing significant heat, pretty similar to what we're seeing here in the U.S. So crop stress is increasing, soil moisture is decreasing, and as we move into the key month of July, that is where the lowest soil moisture and the highest crop stress will be, especially again for corn in Central and Southern Europe.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics, joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org, willag.org. We're coming into the last 7 days of our fiscal year. And for next year, we need to have all the money in the bank that we'll be using by the time we get to the end of the month. If you can help us out with a donation, that would be great. Make sure that you tell the person you're talking to or that you write into the comments section in support of Ag. You can make those donations at 217-244-9455 or at willag.org. Look for the donation button at the top of the page. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.